All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp. Drew Nixon producing the show as always. And you guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Toast Service text line, 913-586-7965. Here in about a half hour, we'll talk to the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, JJ Piccolo. Just six games to go. We're going to talk about the importance of tonight's game with not only JJ, but of course, here in about 8 minutes or so to start off the show. Because this is it. This is it. Off day yesterday. We know where this team has been. We know they've lost seven in a row. And I think you and I, and we were talking to Rob and CDOT in the bullpen as well. Just like everybody has the same feeling about tonight. So we're going to, in terms of how important it
seems
is.
Seems like we agree.
Everybody's on the same page. So we'll get to that also a little bit later on in the show. We'll hit all three locals. We didn't do that yesterday coming off of the Chiefs game, but a lot going on with KU, K-State, and Missouri, and certainly, unless you were a Missouri Tigers fan, it was not a good weekend for the local college football schools.
Sure wasn't.
What that can mean for the potential path towards a college football playoff. So that's coming up in just a bit. And yes, the video stream will be up at some point. I don't know if it's currently up. We'll just have a three shot, or we can just go to a solo shot on Drew today if we would like throughout much of the show. He is counteracting everything by wearing, once again, a AJ Green jersey today. Tried to push back as if nothing is wrong. Which, you know what?
Supports his squad.
I apologize. You know what? Cincinnati's, you're right. They are totally fine. There's nothing to worry about. I apologize to Ja'Marr Chase. We should not have made fun of him. He actually was 100% accurate when he said that they are the team to beat. My mistake, everybody is beating them. So I apologize to you, Drew. I apologize to Ja'Marr Chase. You guys are going to be just fine.
I don't think that's what Ja'Marr Chase meant when he said that.
There is nothing to worry about. 0-3, no problem. Only 2.5% of teams in NFL history have made the playoffs after that. You're good. So we'll get to last night's performance.
What did I say yesterday,
all
though?
Fine, man. There's nothing to worry about. I'm not worried. You shouldn't be worried.
So
they're fine.
You're saying there's a chance.
Yeah, they're fine, Drew. You should be confident, man.
I'm not saying that. You know? I'm saying it's a 0% chance.
Everyone should be fired today, actually.
No,
believe it or
no
not.
Problems in Cincy. You know, everything's fine.
It's a tough one. I mean, they look. Commanders cooked them. We can get into them in a minute. I don't want to focus on a team out of a different city.
That's not relevant anymore. You're right. I should stop talking about that.
They are, and we can talk about this in about 20 minutes, they are irrelevant at the moment. And until they become relevant, they are no longer going to be a regular fixture on this show. But, so I've watched now three full weeks of the NFL, and so have you. And I've seen the good performances like Josh Allen's last night. I've seen some really good performances. Hell, I had an Andy Dalton this week and across the league. And there's one thing that stands out, and I could take it in the positive or the negative. I don't think the Chiefs offense looks very good. I don't think they're playing their best football as a team. I think there's been a lot of mistakes and things I don't like. They are 3-0, and I cannot argue the other versus the other side, right? You can say as much nice things as you want about your 0-3 team, but they are 3-0. And something about it is, what I can't put my finger on is, what is it about Mahomes that still isn't right? Because now the problem is we are talking about 20 consecutive games where he hasn't looked like Patrick Mahomes. And at some point, last year, the easy answer was there. He was throwing to no one. Right. Nobody. Not a soul on that team could catch a pass. And while I know he's without Hollywood Brown this year, he might have a bona fide number one wide receiver in Rashee Rice. Travis Kelce's still on this squad. His depth of target is even below what it was last year. There's no deep threat. There's no challenge. He's making bad picks. I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback, but right now he is off his game.
Well, he admitted
he's missing passes. Something's off.
He admitted it himself after the game on Sunday night. It's early in the year. He acknowledged that he's got to go back to some of the fundamentals. And these are some things that will sometimes come up in the middle of the season. There'll be a stretch. Usually it's like, you know, week 12, 13, 14 or whatever. We're like, man, he's not sharp. And he kind of gets it back locked in. And of course, he had a great postseason a season ago on their way to winning another Super Bowl. So I always think it's a good thing when, in this case, a quarterback acknowledges that they know that what is wrong. Like, it's not like, hey, I got to figure out what's wrong. I don't know what's wrong. He knows what's wrong. All right. I love hearing that. That gives me more confidence when your quarterback is like, no, I know exactly what I'm not doing right, and I got to fix it. And he's got the track record where I think, you know, it's calming enough where you're like, oh, I believe him. I believe he will fix it. But yeah, he's not playing great football. And that's why it's nice that they're 3-0. It's something that will have to get corrected as the season progresses. But why would I not think that he can do that? I think some of it has to do still, and maybe he'll get more confidence now that Wanya Morris put together a nice performance. I think some of it early on, week two, one and two, I still don't believe, no matter what is said publicly, that there was a ton of trust with a rookie left tackle there. And with Wanye, it's still like, okay, I think the more that it looks like now, Wanye is the left tackle, and if he can actually be stable, not to be great, doesn't have to play like an all-pro, but can he be stable, that is also going to help Mahomes. We went through the numbers, and I haven't looked post-week three, so I don't know if this is still the case. I know going into week three, Mahomes was getting the ball out quicker than he ever had in his career, which sometimes you're like, well, that's a really good trait to have, but not necessarily in this offense. You mentioned the average depth of target. Entering this week, other than Jaden Daniels, until last night, other than Jaden Daniels, Mahomes and him basically were the lowest average depth of target in the NFL.
So, and with a rookie and we quarterback.
Saw, and we saw that on it. No, you're wrong. It worked on Sunday night, but those wide receiver screens, I mean, they're clear. There's like no depth of target. I mean, it's at the line of scrimmage. So, you know, those are why we've seen that numbers on average depth go down. They had the one deep pass. We got all excited, admittedly, myself included, with Rashee Rice against Cincy for 44 yards. We're like, hey, the deep ball is back. Well, that's the last time we've seen a pass with that kind of air yards.
Well, and I guess that's what it is now that, you know, like, and I know Hollywood's not here, but like with Rashee and they, you know, drafted Xavier Worthy, who runs like a 3.14 40 time. They might run one of the, over the last year and now the first three games of this year, they might run a bottom five most exciting offense in the sport. Which seems counterintuitive to having Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. Are you kidding me? You're telling me that the single most talented quarterback in the league, the man who's won back-to-back Super Bowls, three Super Bowls, the guy who set the touchdown passing record for the most in the first 100 games, the one who has all of these passing records, yardage, touchdowns, air yards in the early going, you're telling me they run the most boring offense? How? Like, is Andy at play here to the point that he just decided the only way to counteract the defenses are to employ the most boring strategy on the planet? Some of it is, I get it. It's just like, I don't like the optics of it. I want them to be a little more high-flying, a bit more of a threat, a team that can still go down the field. I just think it all feels off early. I'm still hopeful because I think the reason why they're 3-0, and here's the positive end. The reason why I think they're 3-0, despite all the things we just said, is because I actually think they have one of the most talented rosters in the entire NFL. I think the reason why they're 3-0 is they are so much more talented than most of the teams in the NFL, it doesn't even stop them from losing.
Well, they've won 9 in a row. I mean, go back to last year, they've won 9 in a row. See if you agree with this. On the surface, I thought this comment was nuts because of what you just said based off of Andy Reid's track record, and so this would be like viewed as an insult. But at the same time, I actually think right now with how they're playing, it's not far off. So John Middlecoff, you guys may recognize the name, maybe you don't. He works for The Volume, right? Colin Cowherd's podcast network. So Middlecoff used to be a scout in the NFL. He now does his own podcast. He's very entertaining. After the Sunday night game, there was a clip that I didn't listen to the whole podcast, but there was a clip that they put out. And he said that the Chiefs offense and how they're winning right now as a team is no different than how the Steelers are winning. And I know initially you're like, oh, how dare you? But you know what?
I actually think it's accurate. You know what? Right now,
it's actually a fair point. He's like, we perceive the Chiefs and how they're winning right now different because, well, they have Patrick Mahomes.
Not Justin Fields.
But if you step back and take like the, hey, don't be so sensitive about the comment basically away, and you look at how the Steelers have won and you look at how the Chiefs have won, and yes, Justin Fields, nobody's saying he's the same quality of quarterback as Mahomes. That's not his point. He's saying that the Chiefs are relying on defense, that the offense is not explosive, that their quarterback is right now not playing his best. And he's saying like they're finding ways to win the same way the Steelers are. I'm like, at first I hate it. Like, but I think currently, do I think that's going to be the case all year? No, but right this second, I don't think he's far off. And that comment normally would people get all bent out of shape about it and view it as an insult. But I actually think there's some truth to that.
I think there's a lot of truth to it. Bill Belichick was actually on the broadcast last night. You want to hear what he had to say? So he stood up for Mahomes a little bit because he was talking about his post-game interview in which Mahomes didn't stand out as being a world beater in that game. And he had this to say about his leadership.
Well, honestly, I think some of the teams, it's, you know, get a little too high and a little too low, you know, after certain games. honestly, you know, one of the things that really jumped out at me was last night when they interviewed Mahomes. You know, he talked about, I mean, they're 3-0, and you could easily sit there and say, oh, you know, they're on course, and here we go again, big win in Atlanta and all that. But, you know, there's Mahomes talking about how bad they're playing and how much harder they need to work and improve. And honestly, I think that's the, you know, that's the attitude of a champion right there. I mean, it just jumps off the screen at you. They won a big game, and really what he's talking about is how much work they have to do, how much better they need to be, how it all starts with him. You know, I'd say I would still take his performance over a lot of other guys in this league. But, you know, here he is putting it on his shoulders. And you know what? When he says that and you're another member of that team, it's hard for you not to take the same attitude and say, you know what? If Patrick feels like we got to play better and he's got to play better, then maybe I got to play better, too. I thought that was great leadership.
I think that he's right. Yeah. I think that Patrick Mahomes knows he has to play better than this. I think last year when he and other members of the team talked about how it wasn't a fun regular season, they were telling the truth, because I don't think Mahomes wants to play like this, right? I don't think he wants to play this, I'm throwing the ball negative 2 yards in every pass play and just hoping they run and move it forward. But he will. He will play like this if it means a win. He will grind out some hideous number. It won't look like the Bills last night where Josh Allen has 4 passing touchdowns and 270 yards in the first half. But what's the record of each of the teams over their last 2 games? 1-0 and 1-0. What's the record of both teams? 3-0 and 3-0. Mahomes will take the win over the glory if that's what it takes, but I kind of want both.
Like, yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, both. Everybody loves when you're scoring 34 points a game and all of that, but we have seen through this dynasty run, it is truly a buildup for the postseason. You know, and I think they recognize that. Like this, how they're playing right now, yeah, it's probably not good enough to win a Super Bowl, but this is not how they're going to play all year.
But it's September 24th. Yeah. They don't have to play as
good
enough to win a Super Bowl.
And so, you know what? You might as well win some games while you're trying to figure it out. And that's what they've been able to do. And so that's why the pressure, the thermometer, and all that kind of stuff in the city is still very low, because they've won games while they've had issues. And let's just be honest, other than Buffalo, who you just pointed out, we'll talk about them at 11 o'clock, and Josh Allen looks great so far. Other than them, man, nobody else in the NFL looks all that great. Nobody else looks great.
Nope.
There are flaws all over the place for a variety of reasons. There's injury. Everybody's dealing with injuries already. We know the Chiefs have theirs, and certainly plenty of other teams in the NFL, 49ers, et cetera, plenty of teams have injuries.
Yeah, the 49ers are also trying to figure it out, but they're losing while they do it. And I won't take that away from any part of it. And I get it. Like, people are going to throw out the Patrick Mahomes has thrown 30 picks in the 36 games since Tyreek Hill has left. He's also won the Super Bowl in both of those years.
Yeah.
So, like, am I going to let one stat about Mahomes throwing a few too many picks burn this thing down? No, I can't. I can't fundamentally. While at that same time, he's played great in the postseason, and they won the Super Bowl each of the last 2.
Coming up again in about 15 minutes, we'll talk to the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo. It is crunch time, to say the least. 6 games to go, beginning tonight in the nation's capital. Cole Reagan's on the bump. And you said it in passing yesterday, and you're like, you said, hey, tomorrow start. Fully agree with you. I also just think tonight will tell us if they have a chance to just recover. Like, a win, duh, they need the win. But I'm just talking, Cody, just the whole vibe of the team this evening in D.C. Does the offense show any sign of life? Gotta see a little bit. That I mean, you need the win because of Cole Reagan's, and you're playing a bad Nats team, and there's only 6 games left, so duh. But I just feel like even if you were to somehow lose tonight, but like, I need something from offense. But if it's a 4-hit night of 1 run, no, they're screwed. Like, tonight has to have some life from the offense and a sign that there was a reset or whatever the hell it was. We were in our meeting yesterday after the show, and I told you guys, and I'm like, I don't normally buy into the team meeting stuff. I know we talk so much about Ibanez and the team meetings back in 13, 14
closed
or whatever.
Door meeting.
Normally I roll my eyes at that. I'm like, how much does that help? But I am kind of stunned. I haven't heard anything about, well, they had a closed door meeting. I'm not even saying that solves everything, but I'm actually kind of stunned. And then we were talking more with our boss about it, and we're like, who would even give that meeting right now?
Before, I would have said Vinny.
Who's that guy
but can
now?
Can you give that meeting if you're currently hurt? Maybe. I don't really care.
Tommy Pham hadn't been on the team long enough. He's not playing well right now. Salvador Perez, we know, like, in general, the way the locker room and clubhouse is split, it's just a little bit different dynamic there. And so I don't know who that individual is.
It should be Bobby.
It should, but that's not his personality, typically.
I know, but wouldn't it, you know, it's like the quiet guy in the office when he finally speaks up. And Bobby leads by his play, and we know that that's been the case. Yeah. But it's probably time to just like stand in front of everyone and be like, we're fixing this tonight. Because yes, I'm not using this as hyperbole or to get you to listen to the 96.5 The Fan later where this game will be on. This is a playoff game tonight. Not by like, oh, this is a damn playoff game tonight. You should treat it as such. If your starter's got the bases loaded in the fifth inning and you got Erceg up to take on the number one hitter, fine. If you got a pinch hit for someone late, pinch run, you better do anything you can to win this game tonight. As far as I'm concerned, this is a one-game wild card game like 2014, and you got to win this one under any circumstances. You can't let the streak continue. Under any circumstances, you cannot let that streak continue. You have to win this game by all means necessary. The final six games are essentially like a playoff series. I think they're all probably going to have that feeling, but at the very least, and at the most, probably this one matters more than any of the other ones. I'm watching this with bated breath, every single pitch, like I'm watching a game in the middle of October, like they need this damn thing to not get eliminated from the postseason. Because, and look, you're going to have even more evidence. Guess who plays today at noon? The Tigers. The Tigers' record for today will be in there. So whether they win, and they're now a half game up on your ass, or they lose, and all of a sudden you're a half game up on them and can get yourself a game on the Tigers and a game on the Twins, everything's going to be on the line tonight. And you know why it's extra that way? Because Cole damn Reagans is on the mound for your team. I might feel different. Maybe I wouldn't speak this way if it was Michael Lorenzen on the bump tonight. It's not a knock on him. But because of everything you need, and it's Cole Reagans on the mound, you have to win.
Well, I think the who's on the mound, I would have valued that more a couple weeks ago, but they've had those guys on the mound during this losing streak, and it hasn't mattered. Yeah. We joked yesterday, like they could have had Maddox, Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, whoever you consider to be all-time greats on the mound during this losing streak, and it wouldn't have mattered. They haven't scored. The offense has been asleep. They have not hit with runners in scoring position. How many double plays have they had over the last seven games during this streak? Bases loaded a couple times during this streak, popping out in the infield. So it's not so much the starting pitching. I agree with you. Like, yes, great that they have Reagans on the mound tonight. It makes you feel better about the situation. But it's not like he hasn't pitched during this losing streak as well. It is all about the offense. It sets the tone if you can go out there and have a strong pitching performance. But it really is, if there was ever a time to find a way to also early on in a game, snap out of it. Because I'm telling you, if it's the seventh inning, and I don't even care if it's nothing, because Reagans is pitching great. If it's the seventh inning and this team has two hits and no runs and they're playing the Nats, how does it not creep into your mind again if you're these guys?
I mean, creep?
They're still humans.
It would be all through my brain, yeah. Like brainwashed at that point.
Whereas, it almost feels like it almost has to be one of the first two or three innings of this game to break loose, string a couple hits together, get on the board, and take a deep breath. A win is a win if you find it to snap the streak, but I don't know, man. If it's the seventh or eighth inning and it's the same offensive struggles, even in a scoreless game or a tie game, obviously at 0-0 in this scenario, I think it won't matter. You mentioned the Tigers, and I get it. The Tigers, of course, are right behind them as well. I still think it's ultimately about what the Twins and the Royals do. To me, it's which one of them is going to suck less during these final six games for our spot. Now, if you want the second wild card spot, then yes, you not only have to win, but you also need to keep an eye on what the Tigers are doing. We know the Royals have the tiebreaker. But to me, it's the Twins. They have been horrific as well. And so what are the Twins doing? They're six. Do the Twins snap out of it? They're having the same conversation in Minneapolis. Do the Royals snap out of it and put some more pressure on the Twins? The pressure's already there. So I'm watching the Tigers today as well, but I also think in terms of an actual playoff spot, are the Twins going to find a way to go 5-1 in their final six or 4-2 in their final six? Or are they going to be 2-4 in their final six and the Royals can just be 500, 3-3 and stay alive? Because that might be the formula that it takes.
And I don't understand this sentiment at all from the 816. Why are we wanting them to make the postseason so bad? We all know damn good and well they won't go far in the postseason if they make it. First off, I don't care about how far they go in the postseason as it relates to them making it. They haven't made the postseason in 9 years. Just making the postseason this year was always a massive success and would have been considered a massive success. That's every playoffs. So just every team who thinks they can't win at all just root for not being in the postseason? And also, the postseason is a weirdo, nonsensical fiction land in which previous results don't actually determine what you do in the postseason. And if for some reason they can hit when they get to the postseason, even a little, their pitching could still carry him. But I just don't agree with the sentiment. You should never be rooting for a team. This isn't the NFL where your draft pick is better because you don't make the postseason. There is no harm in you making the postseason and losing immediately, other than the fact you actually made the damn postseason. They've only made it, what, four times in my whole life?
Right.
1985 when I was one, 2014, 23 times, 2015. Three times in my whole life, I'll take a fourth. Thanks. I don't care.
Right. Got to get in the dance, but then see what happens. We've seen stranger things happen in sports, especially baseball, in a wild card weekend, a wild card series. Now it's not one game, as we know. It's the best of three. We've seen crazy things happen. Get in, and then honestly, you get in, and then this losing streak doesn't mean a damn thing anymore. And that's the beautiful thing. If they can somehow find a little bit of life during these final six, then you truly can have the deep breath and say, hey, we played like crap the last month. That doesn't matter anymore. Just like, you know, you want to have momentum. Sure, you prefer that going to the postseason. But what the Tigers are doing, ultimately come playoff time, what they've done the last month won't matter in that first series. You know, so get in. Got to find a way to get in. And yeah, tonight is massive. We're going to talk to JJ Piccolo about that here in about 10 minutes or so. The general manager of the Royals right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan. We had a doubleheader last night, though. Monday Night Football. I like the doubleheader, especially because one of the games
again
stunk.
Again next week and not good matchups.
Especially since one of the games stunk. The Bills were flat out dominant against the Jags. We're going to talk about the implications, not only for Buffalo, but could Doug Peterson be out of a job before the end of this season? We're going to get to that at 11 o'clock. But Cincinnati is 0-3, and they ran into the coming out party for Jaden Daniels, the quarterback of the Washington Commanders. I know it's week three. I'm not telling you suddenly he's a top five quarterback and is going to put up the same numbers that CJ Stroud did.
But if you're in Washington, you're probably feeling very good.
But if you're a Commanders fan, especially when you've been dealing with a carousel at quarterback and nothing to root for many, many, many years, that throw late in the game to seal the win where he's got a pass rusher coming down right in into him. Terry McLaurin, great catch, but that throw was perfection. That throw was big time elite type of stuff that you wait to see if a quarterback transitioning to from college to the NFL can make at this level. And he did it on Monday Night Football against a Cincinnati team that, heading into the season at least, people viewed as a Super Bowl contender. That defense may not be great, to say the least, in Cincy. Everybody's scoring on them. But that was so impressive by Jaden Daniels. And now the Commanders are 2-1. You got a Cowboys team in that division not playing great football. Like, let's see what the Commanders can do all of a sudden. And then on the flip side, of course, Cincinnati, 0-3, man. They got Carolina coming up. But we thought they were going to cruise against the Commanders. So the Panthers game's not even a pushover opponent.
This
the Commanders
the
are cooked. The Bengals are cooked at this point.
Look, I could point out the schedule just as the same as everyone did before the season about why Cincinnati would finally get off to a good start. Three of their next four games are against the Panthers, the Giants, and the Browns. Those teams stink. They're terrible. But so is Cincinnati. Their defense might be one of the worst in the league. Joe Burrow's playing pretty good. Ja'Marr Chase finally showed up. Cam Taylor-Britt can't shut up. He keeps calling people college offenses. His own coach called him out last night. His own coach told him to be quiet. This is him on Cam Taylor-Britt.
It was a nice college offense. Yeah. Have an issue with that? Do you feel like those are?
That's not what we do. That's not what we do. We praise our own team, praise the other team. We don't need to take shots like that. That team hasn't punted in 2 weeks. They've scored on every single possession the last 2 weeks. So I've got a tremendous amount of respect for what they're doing over there. I've known Cliff a long time. I knew paired with that quarterback, this was going to be a very dangerous offense to play against, and they've proven that so.
They're falling apart. I give them a 0.00% chance of making the postseason. I know that the odds technically say it's like a 2.5% chance. The actual percentage is zero.
Yeah, so since 1990, only four out of 158 teams have made the NFL playoffs after an 0-3 start, which, yes, is 2.5%. And they got the Panthers and then, I believe, the Ravens after that coming up for Cincinnati. Yeah, the offense with T. Higgins opened things up for Ja'Marr Chase. He played great.
Yeah.
That defense is a big problem. And ultimately, I think if it's a week one loss and you're like, hey, our offense played great, our defense stinks, that holds more weight. When you're already 0-3, you can't just be like, well, our offense is great, though, so we're fine. No, your defense sucks. And at some point in time, I'm waiting for Ja'Marr Chase to just have the full-on blow-up.
Meltdown.
And meltdown. He said the Bengals were the team to beat, and now everybody is beating them at this point in time.
I thought Ja'Marr was really good post-game.
So, what?
I thought Ja'Marr was really good post-game.
Do you think that Cincinnati's making the postseason, Drew?
I have my doubts, but there's not a zero. I'm not saying no.
Yeah. You're not saying zero, but if you had to bet it right now, you'd say no, I assume, because that's logic.
I don't bet on the Bengals.
Well, yeah. Speck has that same
rule. I've never bet on my team. I don't know why you would.
Well, you saved yourself some money this year, man.
Yeah, for sure. And anybody who was in Survivor who kept trying to go back to the well, crazy. That ain't working for you
Survivor
either.
Survivor chaos, man. Survivor chaos.
Yeah, it was a crazy, I mean, they played about as perfect as they could do last night, and people blaming Joe Burrow don't.
Burrow played great.
They didn't watch the game. He was 10-10 against the Blitz, 150 yards, three tutties.
Yeah. But he played terrible against the Patriots, and he played okay against the Chiefs. He played great in this game, and it happened to be in their worst defensive effort.
He outplayed Mahomes in that game. I thought he played fine against the Chiefs. It's just that they didn't
I didn't say Mahomes played great. Mahomes also played okay.
They just didn't finish with touchdowns. That was the thing that killed him against the Chiefs, where as opposed to this one, they couldn't get a stop to save their lives. The one that was really irritating was 2nd and 20. And in my head, I'm like, I know they're going to give it up. It's just going to happen because it's what they do. 3rd and 13. Okay, here we go. They allow a wide open Zach Ertz for a first down. And it's like, man, Lou Anarumo blitzed Jaden Daniels, I think, five times in the game. And it's like, dude, I'm begging you to just send a blitz because the four guys can't get there. He had a perfect pocket, 91% completion percentage, which is the highest for any rookie, by the way. Jaden Daniels had there were shades of Lamar Jackson last night, which
won't be a problem because they'll play the actual Lamar Jackson in 2 weeks. So I'm sure they'll be fun.
Yeah, it wasn't very fun to watch because as great as Lamar Jackson is, it's not fun to watch your team go against him because the guy just can never go down for a sack. It was impressive.
We'll talk about the rest of the AFC here in about 30 minutes or so on the positive end with what the Bills look like in terms of for the AFC race and what that can mean for Josh Allen's MVP chances as well. But up next, we get right back to the Royals. The general manager of the Royals, J.J. Piccolo, joins us here on 96.5 The Fan. All right, back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp with you here in about 15 minutes. We'll get to a decision that was already made 3 weeks into the season that I wonder if it would have happened if the Chiefs were not going for a three-peat. We'll run that by you guys coming up in just a little bit, but let's get right back into the Royals. 6 games to go. Of course, the Royals in action tonight right here on 96.5 The Fan in the nation's capital. Cole Reagan's going up against the Nats, and we go out to the hotline and welcome in the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo, and he's brought to you by Technology Group Solutions, where purpose meets possibilities. Good morning, J.J. Great to have you on the show. Look, from the last time we talked to you to now, of course, unfortunately, a lot has changed with the standings and where the wild card situation sits. From the eyes of a GM, what are you seeing from this team that unfortunately is sitting on a 7-game losing streak?
Well, clearly, it's a disappointing week. I mean, it's 7 games in a row that we dropped, and you know, there's nothing we can do about it at this point other than move forward. We've put ourselves in a great spot to finish up the season, and we have a great chance of getting the playoffs. And if we dwell on what happened the last 7 days, then we're not going to be able to pick up and move forward tonight. But I know the guys are in the right frame of mind, and you know, that's all I'm focused on right now. We can't talk too much about what we didn't do. We need to talk about what we're going to do in the coming week.
When we talk about stuff like this, leadership typically comes up, JJ, because you know, Q is talking about, look, it's hard not to be a bit down when you're in the middle of that streak. How do you, you know, what's your role in this? Do you leave it to the players? How does everyone handle this stuff? Or do you just try to be like, well, today's a different day. Here's who's on the mound. Take a look at the scouting report. Do you ignore it in some ways? Or do you need people to step up as leaders in this moment?
Yeah, you can't overreact to it. I mean, I lead in a certain way. Q leads in a certain way. The players lead in a certain way. And, you know, the reason why we're in this spot is because we've how we've led throughout the season, and we know that there's ups and downs throughout the year. You know, so we're not going to change what we're doing. There's no sense of panic. There's a reason why we're in this spot. We're proud that we're in this spot. We just got to play a good baseball game tonight. It's that simple. And if we go changing our philosophies, our methods, that's a sign of panic, and we're certainly not going to do that.
Is that why you get tempted? So I'd be curious, right? I think fans would ask this question, so that would be like the Tigers call up Job, right? They say, you know what, anything we need the last 6 days to get the win, we got to ensure we get to the postseason. I think some fans had wondered that about like anybody in AAA too. Like, are you willing to let your waters hit for a week, even if they're not postseason eligible, if you think you can win tonight? Do you guys get tempted by that, or does that kind of fall into that trap you're talking about where making those moves sends a warning flag that like there are bigger problems?
Yeah, I can't think for the Tigers. I know they've used their bullpen quite a bit, and I'm sure that has as much to do with it as anything. But for us, the guys that got us here are here. And that's not to take away from anybody in AAA.
We believe in who we have on this roster. We believe they're going to step up, and that's what we've got to do. And if you start making crazy moves last week, you know, there's no guarantee that's going to work either. You know, so you stick with what you know and trust in the players you have. And let's face it, we throughout the week, we were one big hit away from winning a game. You know, that's really what it comes down to. And the outlook looks a little bit different. But we're still, even though tied with Detroit, we're a game up on them because we have the tiebreaker. We're a game up on Minnesota. And that's the positive. We're in the five spot right now. So they're chasing us. We're not chasing them. And that's what that's why we got to keep it real and understand what's in front of us. And it all starts with tonight. That's where it starts with tonight and you move on.
That mentality, do you sense being around the guys on now what is this final road trip of the regular season? Do you sense that is the mentality from guys like Bobby and other leaders on this team that, you know, they are still in a playoff spot? You guys are still in a playoff spot right this second.
Yeah, they've been really good. I mean, of course, they're down after a loss, and you start thinking about what could have been. But that off day yesterday, I think, is very beneficial because you can regroup and reassess and say, okay, what do we need to do? We've got the right people in that clubhouse. And, you know, there's some youth in there, but there's also some veteran presence. And I think this is where it really pays off because they've been through these things. We've got three guys in that clubhouse right now, and Robbie Grossman, Will Smith, and Chris Stratton, that were on the exact same ride last year, but they were coming from behind when they were with Texas. They managed to get in and they ran the playoffs. So you had guys that went through this and experienced it very recently. So that's nothing but a benefit for us and how it's going to affect how our guys come into the clubhouse today and play tonight.
How do you think it sets up? Like we said, I feel like tonight is essentially the start of the playoffs as I view it, JJ. Like, this is a playoff game. It should have a similar intensity to a playoff game if you are a Royals player. Do you think that that's the right mentality to go into a regular season game this late in the year?
Well, I mean, it goes against what we've been saying all year, just one game at a time. It's about today, but we know there's six games left. And if you win two out of three or sweep a series, you certainly are going to put yourself in a much better spot. So that's one way to look at it. It's two, three-game sets that if we win those three-game sets, that you're going to certainly be in a great position come Sunday night. But if you don't, you're not eliminated. So, you know, we don't like scoreboard watching, but obviously, you know, you do that this time of year. We've gotten a lot of help. There's a lot of teams right now not playing great baseball, whether it's Minnesota, whether it's Baltimore, whether it's us. You know, so we've been fortunate that we're still in this spot. But if you want to look at it like it's three-game sets and we got to win them, you know, it's one way to look at it. But again, it goes against what we've said all year long, and that's just to take care of today. And if we get help somewhere else, you know, you may not have to win the series, but we want to win them. You know, we control our destiny. We want to win these series and do what we can. So that's the reality of where we are with six games left. Every one of them counts the same, but now we're getting towards the ultimate, the end of the season. So it is a little bit more glaring.
Harder.
You know, you got to look at it a little bit differently, but we don't want guys to focus on the next 3 days or the next 6 days. They need to be 100% focused on tonight, and that's how you take care of business.
We're talking to general manager of the Kansas City Royals, JJ Piccolo, here on 96.5 The Fan. We know right now for the next six, though, a couple weeks ago we talked to you about just maybe the way the rotation would play out depending on where you were playoff positioning-wise and then going into the final series or two of the season. We know Reagans is on the bump tonight. I don't believe you guys have officially announced tomorrow. Lorenzen had that simulated game the other day. Is the thought that that's a spot tomorrow where he could slide in?
Yeah, there's a chance we're going to do that. We got to see. He's going to go through a throwing program today just to make sure he's okay. So there's a chance he may start that game. He's not stretched out to 75, 80 pitches. So we have other guys, though, whether it's Alec Marsh or Daniel Lynch, that are stretched out, and we can cover the seven innings we need to if Michael feels good going through his workouts today.
Talk to me about Daniel Lynch a little bit. I think for a long time it was Daniel Lynch the starter. Even in the minors this year, it was Daniel Lynch the starter. But we talked about it maybe 2 weeks ago, but it's only gone better for Daniel Lynch since then, JJ. What have you seen out of him in the last 2 weeks? Because he's been a massive force for you guys in the bullpen.
He's been outstanding. You know, the biggest thing, you know, from my perspective, he's just on the attack. I mean, he's going after hitters. Whether it's the reliever mentality or not, I don't really know. I can't get into the mind of Daniel Lynch, but I know that the way he's going after hitters, using his fastball, using his off-speed pitches, he's not trying to make pitches. He's trying to just be in the zone, get ahead of hitters, put hitters away when he gets the two strikes. And that's a great recipe for success. And he's done it extremely well over the last several weeks. So it's been a boost. I mean, it really has, with some guys getting hurt. You know, you need guys to step up. Daniel stepped up and others have stepped up. And that's been a great thing. And that's why we've said all along, you got to have depth in the roster. And fortunately, we've had depth on the pitching side that we can, you know, replace a Will Smith or a Chris Stratton, Lorenzen going down. You know, we've had guys step up and do what they need to do to allow us to be in the spot we're in.
We'd asked about the offense earlier, and I think it's been about 3 weeks since we checked in. How is the healing going for Vinny?
You know what? He's pushing hard. He's had a scan yesterday. I've not gotten the results that'll tell us a little bit more about where he's at in his healing process. We got to keep in mind it's a broken bone, and he's not going to be able to play if that bone's not healing in a fashion that's satisfactory to start swinging. So hopefully that scan was good, and he can take the next step. But he's still a little bit away from being able to really compete at a high level or in a game.
J.J. Piccolo, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals. Appreciate it, J.J., and hope to have you on next week. That would mean good things for the Royals and good things for Kansas City.
Well, I look forward to it, and I appreciate everything this whole season. So thank you, and let's talk a couple more times.
Absolutely. There you go. J.J. Piccolo with us here on 96.5 The Fan. He's brought to you by Technology Group Solutions, where purpose meets possibilities. And, yeah, our hope is to have him on for multiple weeks ahead if the Royals ultimately get in the postseason and maybe go on a little bit of a run as well. But as we said to start the show, you know, the meaning of tonight's game, the weird balance is, you know, even JJ acknowledged, like, normally it's a one day at a time approach. They're not going to change everything all of a sudden, but also there's an acknowledgement of like, yeah, hey, we only got six of these left. We're right here. We've put in all this work all year. We've put ourselves in a spot to have a really special season capped off by a playoff appearance and hopefully more. But now these six games are going to decide whether or not we do get in. So it's a weird balance because, you can't, especially in today's day, like you can't completely put on blinders and ignore where you're at. You can ignore the outside noise, sure, but they know the standings. Bobby Witt Jr., these guys, they know that they've lost seven in a row, but ultimately I think they're
still in a playoff spot.
Some of that right there, which is why we asked JJ, is like, is that the vibe you're getting from the guys as well? Like, yes, the seven game losing streak sucks, but also, like, despite all that, they have to catch up to us still. But it also starts with a win this evening against the Nationals, where Cole Reagan's on the mound, and it sounds like maybe Michael Lorenzen could help tomorrow as a guy in the rotation, but he's only going to be available for, what did he say, 70, 75 pitches if things go well today. So it could be a Lorenzen, Daniel Lynch type of day or Alec Marsh type of day tomorrow.
But it might very well be by the time, you know, like, Lorenzen gets in there, it might have to be a guy that we just talked about with Daniel Lynch behind him and piggybacked behind there to try to get a win. Goes back to the whole same thing. Tonight matters so much. We'll talk more about it later on in the show again. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big deal, obviously, what happens in the result tonight. I'll say, I do think that would be my messaging. Rather than, like, if I were right now and I were J.J. Piccolo or I was Matt Cotrero, I don't think I'd go in there and be like, come on, guys, pull your head out of your ass. What are you doing out there? You're swinging at everything. It's driving me nuts. Instead, Gold, my energy would be, we are in a playoff spot. We are in the playoffs right now. And just as long as maybe we didn't take care of business before, who cares? If we take care of business over the next six games, guess what we'll still be in? A damn playoff spot. My argument would be, I think if I were them, I would be like JJ. I know it sounds like fans want to dwell on the negative, and I get that. It's easier, honestly. I would be pitching the story that is, we're in the playoffs. We're good here. Let's just go win now. Forget what happened. Yeah, that is the right attitude because, I mean, what else you got?
Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll talk about the rest of the AFC. The Bills off to a hot start. Josh Allen looked terrific. He is now a co-favorite, depending on what sportsbook you're looking at, to be MVP. It's very early on in the season, but that is a shift in the MVP market. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. But I mentioned before we had JJ on, something happened already 3 weeks into this NFL season for the Chiefs. That I'm wondering, do we think they make the same decision if they were not chasing history? If they were not coming off of back-to-back Super Bowls, going for a three-peat, everything that's on the line there. And I'm talking about pulling Kingsley after two games. Now, Wanya Morris, to his credit, I thought he was solid. on Sunday night. I don't think it was a great performance, but we didn't mention him much. Didn't notice him much. That's usually a good thing. A few times they left in Carson Steele to help Chip or whatever. And it led to a big play down the field. That was key. It was one of the better blocks of the game. Most important blocks was from Carson Steele. But do you think the Chiefs, after drafting Kingsley in the second round, after having him get first team reps, like all of training camp, we were up in St. Joe, after starting him week one and starting him week two, do we think if they were not going for a three-peat, if it was just a quote unquote normal season, do they make the switch so quickly?
No. If they're any other
team, I don't think so either.
If they are any of the other 31 teams in the NFL and had made the decisions the same, up to that point, Kingsley Suamate would be starting week three. So they're making it based on their need to win now. And in fairness, you can't really argue it, can you? Like last week, they needed the protection in the game in order to, you know, get the win. They needed that little bit against Atlanta to make sure they had the time to operate. And so it worked. I can't fault the logic in the work. Now, I will question always long-term ramifications of, hey, what did you do to his mentality? Now he can't. So, like, you know, we talk about developing players. I'll be honest. I don't think it's super easy to develop as an offensive lineman if you don't, and I'm dead serious, play. There are some positions that you can develop behind the scenes. Offensive line, that's a tricky one, Gold. You actually have to see some of these reps. You have to be on the field and block some of these guys in order to get better. And for a team that's allowed players to get better throughout the season, they seem to be going the opposite of Kingsley. But if it leads to a third Super Bowl,
nobody's going to complain.
Long term, be damned.
Yeah, nobody's going to complain. I think it has to be, though, that this change happens because of the 3-peat campaign. Because you're right. Typically, Andy's fairly patient. Now, maybe you view it differently because it's the left tackle that's protecting your $500 million quarterback. And so, hey, they're just not going to risk it. And they felt like he was a real liability for his health and what they want to do on offense. Maybe so. But then it's like, what happened during the evaluation period? I get what you're saying. You don't know until you're going up against the best in the world, which is what they did and saw that. But also, I'm just surprised that if it was a true competition in camp, I think my attitude towards this would have been different. Like, if it was, hey, during camp, they're truly rotating in 50-50 Kingsley with Wanye, and during preseason, one preseason game, Wanye got the start, the next Kingsley got the start. It's like, man, this is a really close battle. I think I'd be like, well, it makes sense that they maybe pulled the guy after two games. Yeah. But this to me was it's a performance-based decision. But also it's like, hey, we don't have time for you to figure this one out. Not this year, man. We don't have time. We've got an elite roster. We're going for history. We don't have time, unfortunately, to kind of drag you along with us. We got to have someone that can give us stable play. We agree that maybe your ceiling is higher because of your athleticism, Kingsley, but we need someone that can give us better production at that spot right now. And the answer to that is Wanye. So I don't have an issue with the decision, but I don't believe it's a decision they normally make under Andy Reid. And that's why it stood out.
Yeah. Because, and every other time, I can't think of how many times I've been like, come on, man, stop it. Like you're, I'm almost begging for them to overreact, right? Like normally it's our side, right? You're like, Nick Bolton can't guard. What about on third down? You try Tranquil. And then he has his best game of the year because they're like, relax, dude. You're just, it takes a few games. It's cool. Just be cool. And you're like, last year, talk about how easy it would have been to overreact to wide receiver. Man, they let Tony stay out there all half the year.
They didn't have a replacement. You know, I guess that's the difference too, right? In their mind, Wanye was able to come in. Like, they just didn't have any other option at wide receiver. That's what happened.
Before they bailed on the plan though, man, they kept sticking with it.
They did.
Patient, develop, patient, you know, and like they'll go through it. But with this one, they're just like, I think it's only this position he's willing to do it in, only because they had a second option and because of what we talked about from the beginning of the season. He's not just trying to do his job well and make sure. It's that if he does his job incredibly poorly, like if Kingsley Suamate gets beat, the only person that ends up as a result of the bad on that is Patrick Mahomes. And if there's one thing you definitely can't risk the health of or the safety of the play of, it is the damn quarterback. So left tackle might be the only position on the field they're not willing to be as patient.
Now, I would argue, we didn't all see it, but I think the city's mental health was impacted by Kadarius Toney playing for this football team last year. Now, maybe you're right. The physical health. health.
Physical health. Kadarius Toney wasn't going to get Patrick Mahomes hurt. Okay?
No, but mentally, I think there was some damage done. Some damage was done to this entire city.
My prefrontal cortex may never be the same.
Until they got to the postseason. But anyway, the backfield situation, though, I think you have to feel better about after Sunday night. If you know you're worried you're going to lose Pacheco, and that is a big loss for this team, you don't replace that. But let's say it's going to be 9-10 weeks from now before Pacheco's back. Seeing Carson Steele give you 72 yards, 4.2 yards per carry, and then Perine had a couple. He ends up with 6 for 25. I thought there were two carries in particular that were really, really strong from him. And then Kareem Hunt is on the practice squad. We'll see if he's ready for Sunday or not. I feel pretty good about this backfield. The question I have is, what's the split looking like? You know, I think 17 carries is the most we're going to see in a game, period.
It was 50-50 at the first
half. Was. But Andy rode the hot hand, and I think if you're going to have a backfield with nobody that has a firm grasp on the job, yeah, I'm fine with going with the hot hand, and that was Carson Steele. I would be very surprised we see a game where Carson Steele gets more than the 17 carries. That's a higher number than I thought he was getting. His over-under was set at 11.5, I think, in Vegas.
That.
He went way over, and we said, hey, if you think he's going over the carries, he's going to go over the yardage of 41.5, and he did. I think what is going to happen, whenever that day comes that Kareem Hunt is active, I don't know if it's Sunday or not, the carries for Perine might go away. So let's say it's 6 carries for Perine. Those 6 go to Kareem Hunt.
Correct. But I don't actually think the rest of the split changes.
Yeah, but maybe in the receiving options, Kareem Hunt or Samaje Perine is still a factor there. I think it's the Perine carries go away. Carson Steele is still about the same. And then if the hot hand that day is Kareem Hunt, then so be it.
I think that it'll be a 65-35 split for him. He'll get 65%, especially if he's going to do a good job in pass protection, which he had some moments in the last game in which he held his own in that department. I think it'll be a 65-35 split. The reason why is because they need some, like, if they're not going to have Isaiah Pacheco, who's one of the 10 best backs in the league over the last 20 games or so, over the last year and then the first game before he got hurt this year, then I think you have to, your rushing identity is now, this man would rather die than go down, you know? Maybe he's not as polished of a runner as Kareem Hunt ever was. Maybe he doesn't see things as well as Pacheco yet. But Carson Steele runs like he would do anything to run through you one time. He won't go down. He'll fight for every inch. And that's fine. That's an identity. What you need is a rushing identity. Samaje Perine is not the kind of guy that you want to turn around and hand the ball off to. So as soon as Kareem Hunt comes back, I think those go to him. Samaje stays as the third down passing back. And Carson Steele does the dirty work.
Yeah.
His stat line every week is probably going to be 13 carries for 68 yards and no scores.
That's fine. That's fine, though.
Let's be honest. Yeah. That is probably his stat line every week. 60 to 70 yards, no touchdowns, and like a bulk of the carries. Which, I'm not even disagreeing with the ratio. Seems fine to me. Seems like a good way to set it up.
Yeah, I think we'll hear from Andy coming up again tomorrow, try to see what the maybe progress is, if anything, in terms of getting into football shape for Kareem Hunt with the practice squad going up against the Chargers. Is this the week that they activate him, or they say, hey, we're going to wait one more week and make sure you have Kareem Hunt good to go? Let's not forget, once week 5 hits, Clyde is also eligible in week 5 to come off the NFI list. Doesn't mean he will, but he's eligible. So then it gets
they
a
don't
little
feel
more,
like a rush.
Then
though,
it gets a little more interesting.
Because
at some point, I mean, they're not going to have 4 active running backs on game day. So Carson Steele active, eventually Kareem Hunt will be active. Perine and Clyde, what do you do there? Who's going to be inactive or active? If Clyde's truly available, to me, he will be active.
Yeah, I would think so.
But doesn't mean that come week 9, he's not available. You know, that's the tricky part. We don't know. Or do they have to make a really tough decision roster-wise? And is somebody the odd man out? I mean, Keontae Ingram's an easy guy to just, no offense to him, cut and then
I mean,
bring
him
back
on
the
roster, but that's still only one inactive guy every day. Typically, they go into the game with 3 running backs. Samaje Perine and Carson Steele are locks. Then what do you do about Kareem Hunt or Clyde Edwards-Helaire? But we don't even know. Here's the thing. Andy hasn't talked about Clyde. We don't even know what's going on with Clyde. We don't know. He can come off the list in a couple weeks.
Yep.
We don't know if he is. He could be on that list all year. We don't really have much evidence
like
on that.
And their talks with him, and Collinsworth mentioned it, is they sounded optimistic that he would be able to come off. But again, that's just what they were told.
All right, coming up next, we get to the 11 o'clock hour. Let's talk more about the AFC. The Bills looked great last night, but what does it really tell us about the playoff picture? And then we talk a little local college football. There's only one local school that remains undefeated. That's next.